This is David Harlow with Diabetes Innovation, and I'm speaking today with Dexter Cherney. Cherney is the Chief Medical Officer for Global Health and Wellness at Cummins Incorporated. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Cherney.
It's good to be here, David.
So I am interested to understand what is your role as Chief Medical Officer for Global Health and Wellness at Cummins.
Sure. Well, it's a lot of different things that I do there. So one of the nice things about it is that because it's so many different things, it gives me all of the different leverage points to sort of make things happen. So for one thing, benefits, the entire healthcare benefits program reports to me, and that includes the wellness and those kinds of activities as well, and who we choose to do disease management, case management, who the carriers are. So really all of those vendor relationships flow through my office.
And we should say, if I can interrupt you for just a sec, could you describe Cummins and let us know where you're located, how many employees?
Sure. We're about 50,000 employees. We're located in Columbus, Indiana. But we are truly a global organization, so about 50% of our employees are actually in places other than the United States. But we're a manufacturer. About 50% of our business is actually engine manufacturing, diesel engines, large and small, light duty and heavy duty, as well as marine diesels as well. And then we also have other businesses, such as a distribution business, a filtration business, and also a power generation business, too. So that's basically
okay.
What it is, yeah.
And you were starting to say that you oversee employee benefits, and that includes wellness programs?
That's exactly right. And so I oversee that. Now, we also have we're moving towards on-site medical centers as well, a patient-centered medical home model that we will have on-site next to our plants and office buildings. And so I'm overseeing that development as well.
Excellent. And I imagine you see the opportunity there for better primary care management of employee health, as well as avoidance of some downstream costs.
That's exactly right. And so really what we're doing, we're sort of approaching this on a 360 aspect. So if we're providing or helping to provide some degree of the primary care services through these on-site clinics, we also have incentives that we can provide the employees through benefit design and other kinds of incentives. And also we have the opportunity to educate employees through wellness programs and some other things that we have in mind. So if you think about it, it's really a 360 approach. Now, we have some influence on the built environment. So if you think about the cafeteria, if you think about work-life balance issues, we can attack some of those things as well. So really, from every aspect, we will be looking at, probably in a nutshell, how care is delivered, as well as a lot of the lifestyle aspects that we know drive a lot of the demand.
So for the purposes of our conversation today, I'm focused on diabetes, and I'm wondering how much of a focus your programs have on chronic diseases that are a driver of a large proportion of cost.
Right. So, David, you hit the nail right on the head. Our whole emphasis will be around chronic conditions. When we look at our spend, and we're probably not that much different than others, a lot of that spend is with those chronic diseases. And the other thing we realize is that most of those chronic diseases are preventable. So, we're really, our thought is, why are we paying so much for things that we should be able to prevent to some degree? And so we're really going to focus on how do we do that. And basically for us, it's what we call back to basics. And the basics is really lifestyle. So we actually, in our patient-centered medical homes, we are actually pushing towards a lifestyle approach to care. In our high-performance networks that we will build around those centers, there also will be an emphasis towards a lifestyle approach to care. Our disease management vendor, our case management vendor, our coaches, everyone that touches our patients will need to have this lifestyle approach to care. And our education programs will be a little different than the traditional, you know, diabetic training programs or education programs, or the traditional stop smoking or what have you, because they will truly have a slightly different approach to them as well, really focusing more on the lifestyle than say, medication adherence. Now, that's not to say that we'll do away with that, but we'll really approach it from the basics.
Right. Well, as you say, you're looking to touch employees' and patients' lives, and I think that's really the key to success here is sort of a high-touch approach. I imagine you're familiar with the RAND report on wellness programs that came out a couple months back. That was really on at a high level questioning the whole approach and looking at wellness programs with a very critical eye and questioning whether there is a return on the investment in a direct way and really questioning whether the money spent on wellness really leads to reduced costs in healthcare. I think that for many employers, there's a perceived need to offer wellness programs because that's what the employee market demands, if you will. And I guess the question for you is whether you've seen some evidence of the sorts of wellness programs you're running or looking to implement in the future actually having an effect on employee health and on cost of care?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, there are, all wellness programs are not the same. And what I have found is that if they really focus on, again, going back to basics, if they really focus on some of the lifestyle aspects that we're trying to do at Cummins, then I believe that they can probably save quite a bit. In fact, prior to coming to Cummins, I was at Vanderbilt University, and I had a role there on faculty in the medical school, but I also had a similar job with benefits for employees. And we ran a lifestyle program for diabetics, and we saw a tremendous return on that investment. Now, we had to create our own, and excuse me, and being at a large academic medical center, we had the resources to do that. We really didn't find a program that really met our needs out in the marketplace. So we had to create based on, you know, our evidence, looking in the literature, looking at the evidence in terms of what works and what doesn't work. We put together, we cobbled together our own program, and it worked quite well for us, but again, it was a lifestyle approach. So now that I'm at Cummins, I'm doing some very similar things there, not only for our diabetics, but folks that have other chronic conditions as well. And actually, although we use vendors, actually sorting, trying to nudge those vendors closer to these things that we know work.
So and it sounds like you're looking to customize an offering from a vendor that will meet the needs of your particular population, as well as approaching the philosophical approach that you're articulating as well.
That's correct, David. Yeah.
And do you find that there's openness to doing that in the community of vendors in this space?
I think so. At least all of our vendors seem to be willing to make that move. And let me just sort of give you an example. There's a lot of evidence and a lot of research around the impact of sleep deprivation or not getting enough sleep and its effect on diabetes and obesity. You will find very few, and I could be wrong, but maybe people are changing, but there are very few programs that really tackle that from in the vendor world. And so we want to have a very robust program that deals with, you know, how to get better sleep hygiene, what are the things that people need to do, versus just trying to, you know, grab an Ambien or some medication to put them to sleep. So really a more of a lifestyle approach to that, and what are the things that people need to incorporate into their life so that they can actually get a better night's sleep. And that can have tremendous effects not only on obesity and diabetes, but imagine the effect that it also has on stress and some other things as well.
Are there other, that's interesting and to me a little surprising, maybe it shouldn't be surprising, but are there other kinds of interventions or issues that you're dealing with that might be surprising in terms of the effect that they have on chronic disease?
Absolutely. So one of the things that we did at Vanderbilt in that program is that we have a lot of education for the people in the program around processed meat. So there's literature out there that shows that if you have 2 ounces of red processed meat a day, that you increase your rate of diabetes by 60%. There are very few programs that I'm aware of that really even talk to patients about that. So basically in our program, we had challenges to get people to say, for the next month, I'm going to cut down on the number of hot dogs that I eat, the number of pepperoni, some of the deli meats that I eat, and we sort of challenged them to say, you know, give that a try and see what happens. And amazingly, they started to improve. And very simple things. Now, that's not to say they can never have a hot dog, but obviously if somebody's eating a lot of this every day and every week, then that could really affect their ability to manage their diabetes. So it's not just prevention, but it's also management.
Sure. Now, have you found a need to include external incentives in order to motivate people to adopt behavior changes?
We will. But before I get to that, let me just say that, you know, 2 ounces, you know, people, a lot of people say, well, it's all about portion control. Well, to some degree it is, but 2 ounces isn't very much. There's not a whole lot of portion control that you can do around that. So people really have to understand that. And again, not to force anybody to do anything, but you know, what we find is that, at least at the program at Vanderbilt, is that about a third of the people were just got so excited about this new information that they just pretty much did all that we asked them to do. Another third didn't do very much of anything, and then about another third made some changes. But we had, you know, two-thirds of the population making some dramatic changes, such as giving up some of this processed food that they were eating and showing them exactly how to do it. And we saw dramatic results, even in as little as 6 months. We saw the results. People actually coming off of their insulin.
That's terrific.
Diabetics that had been on insulin for 10 years now being able to come off of their insulin completely just by controlling their diet, exercise, and sleep.
Well, that's a very impressive result, I have to say. The other question I was asking is whether, so it sounds like you did not necessarily see the need to introduce external incentives. That seems to be sort of the secret sauce that people are looking for as we talk these days about gamification of healthcare and developing incentives for people to change behaviors. It sounds like you were able to find through a high-touch program that simply sharing the information, the health effects, was enough, and the tools to change behavior, the information and alternatives, that was enough to get people that really motivated to change.
That's absolutely right. So, you know, what I always say is that if I have to pay you money not to stick a pin in your eye, and so that's where the way a lot of these incentives are. We're actually paying people to do things that are really in their best interest. And so what we find with these more intensive lifestyle program changes is that they start to feel better right away,
mm-hmm.
because the change is so dramatic. I mean, it's almost like somebody that has bariatric surgery and they are no longer a diabetic even before they've lost any weight because they've made a radical change. And so some of this intensive lifestyle, even though they're not starving, And in fact, they're eating quite a bit. They're pretty full. But they've changed what they're eating and how they eat. You can get some pretty dramatic changes, and people start to feel pretty good pretty quickly. And that really, what we have found, is the incentive, and actually that's what makes the programs sustainable. Now, so we did give them an incentive to make sure that they kept coming back to the clinics and that kind of thing. But the incentive was in the form of a grocery card, so that they could then go buy these healthy foods that we were talking about. So that was the only incentive. But we didn't give them cash or lower their co-pays, deductibles on their health plan. We didn't put it into their health reimbursement accounts or anything like that. We just gave them a shopping cart for groceries.
Yeah. Okay. And it sounds to me like this sort of high-touch program would be more expensive than other sorts of interventions that people use around the country. And I am assuming, based on your discussion, that the cost is recovered by employers through employing these tools by virtue of lower overall healthcare expenditures, lower absenteeism, other things like that.
Yeah, just slightly more expensive initially, but to your point, we did recoup the costs quite quickly. I mean, within 6 months, we recouped the cost. And then, assuming that people are sustaining these behaviors, and by all indication, it seems that they are, then we'll continue to recover or have a positive effect, financial effect from this. And so, you know, I mentioned how many came off of their insulin. I should also mention that the total savings wasn't just from diabetic medications, but people also could lower their doses of their cholesterol medications and their hypertensive medications. What you find is when you do intensive lifestyle, everything starts to get better. And the way I look at this as well is if you think about somebody growing vegetables in their garden, and in order to have a healthy plant, you need the right soil, you need the right amount of water, and the right amount of sunshine. And what you then get is you get a healthy plant. The roots are healthy, the stem is healthy, the leaves are healthy, and it bears good fruit. And the human organism is very similar. So that when you start to create this proper environment, not only does the diabetes get better, but the hypertension gets better, the cholesterol gets better. All these things start to go in groups. And anybody that's treated diabetics know that none of these people usually have a single chronic condition. They have multiple chronic conditions. And if they only have a single, it's just a matter of time before they have more than one. And so, again, all of these things sort of go together. And so when you change this environment, everything also tends to get better as well together.
Excellent. Well, it sounds like encouraging work that you've been doing, and I'm glad you're able to bring it to new locations, both here and elsewhere. I am wondering what you hope to experience at the Diabetes Innovation Conference this fall.
Well, I hope to share some of the things that I've learned through experience, as well as learn from others in terms of the good things that they're out there doing. I know that we're not the only ones that are being innovative and creating new things, and so I think it'll just be a great gathering for all of us like-minded trying to, find solutions to these issues to get together and sort of share our wisdom.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Cherney. I appreciate your taking the time to speak with us. This is David Harlow for Diabetes Innovation.
My pleasure. Thank you.